It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
It is the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN. The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. And I obviously am not Homer, I'm Ben Brust. Excited to be joined for this next hour by Brian Bulaga, who just found out 2 minutes ago that he'll be with me till 6 o'clock. What's going on, Brian?
Not much. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you again. Obviously, we need to hit on the first thing that Homer would have you ask him is, right, who's pitching?
Yeah, is the Miz pitching tonight?
The Miz is not pitching tonight, but what I have done, because I think Homer's brilliant in educating all about Jacob Mizorowski, is I like to try and let people know when he pitches next, just in case they want to adjust their schedules accordingly. What I do know is he is probable after their off day on Thursday to pitch against the Chicago Cubs at American Family Field. So a Friday, Jacob Mizorowski, probable start versus the Chicago Cubs. So Homer being brilliant lets you know each day if Miz is pitching. I will let you know when Miz is scheduled to pitch. Don't you think that's a good extension of what Homer's doing?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. But Homer would probably tell you is it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that is what he does say. Is he pitching today? No, yeah. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, if he's not pitching today, then it doesn't matter. And that's what he would say. But I like it because then it gives something for people to look forward to. Doesn't mean you can't ask the question every day. You know, something could happen. Something could happen. Rotation could change. I don't know.
Well, that did happen, Brian. I had him starting when I did this originally on a probable start, and then it got moved. But now I've learned to wait until I see an actual reporter for the Brewers put out the probables. And that with Brandon Woodruff pitching today after getting called up. We do know that it's looking like Jacob Mizorowski is pitching Friday, but they're playing in Cincinnati. What we have seen is when there are rainouts and there's not a doubleheader, that things do get pushed. Sale and Miz were supposed to go against each other, which are two unbelievable pitchers on Friday of last week, and Atlanta was rained out, so then that moved Chris Sale to Saturday against Kyle Harrison. So I'm learning to make sure that I own my part of the is Miz pitching tonight part of this. I guess the next portion, Brian, is Giannis Antetokounmpo still a Milwaukee Buck?
To my knowledge, he still is.
That is correct.
At least to my knowledge.
Now, there's a couple pieces of audio I'd like for you to listen to, and the audience as well. 800-990-3776 is the Carbless Talk and Text Line. Liz is more. Let us know any thoughts that you have on Giannis, and we'll develop more ways for you to get into the conversation. Because earlier this morning on Get Up, this is when, it really started. Everyone's favorite local story reported by the national media, specifically Shams Charania, usually gets a rise out of people when he gives his reports. This was his on Get Up.
Sources tell me a trade and a resolution is coming for the Milwaukee Bucks with Giannis Antetokounmpo before the NBA draft on Tuesday night. The Bucks are in serious conversations with two finalists, the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. Both teams are Giannis's preferred trade destinations, but both of these packages are different deals. The variance of these deals is dramatic. With Boston, it's Jaylen Brown-led package. It's around a veteran player, obviously a superstar caliber player. In Miami, it's a group of cost-controlled players, rookie-scale contracts, significant draft capital in that deal. And so I do want to make this clear, though. Whichever deal occurs, whether it's today or tomorrow, it is going to be a one-to-one deal. It's going to consist of Milwaukee and likely one of these two teams.
So that's from Shams Charania on Get Up. And then, of course, 8 minutes ago, as I'm scrolling on Twitter, Giannis Antetokounmpo has just tweeted this: God in all caps, I trusted you at the beginning, and I will continue to trust you throughout. And it is him as in a very dark picture looking ahead, but he's in a Bucks uniform. So again, here we go. I have no idea what this means. What do you make of a superstar rumored to be traded coming up before the NBA draft tomorrow? Jimmy Haslam, the Bucks owner, had sort of set this in trying to figure out if he's going to be a Buck or if they're going to move on from him. Superstars at the end of their tenure in professional sports, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, this whole thing's been kind of a roller coaster in my opinion, right? Like, there's just been so much with the Giannis. Is he being traded? Was he being traded during the season? Was he going to be traded last season? And now here we go with this. But just from a superstar standpoint, being traded right before the draft, right? Like, that's essentially whatever a deadline may hit, right? Like, that's essentially what we're getting at. You obviously go back and reflect on all the good that superstar has done for your franchise and organization, which obviously he brought a championship, which, like, that's what he'll always be remembered as a Buck, in my opinion, right? When a guy like that brings home a title, like, that's obviously the first thing that you think of. But now, like, this is where it gets messy, and this is where fans turn on said superstar, right? Like, because it gets messy with these trades and how long it's taken, or should have they've done it earlier. Is Giannis not being clear with his messaging? Why hasn't he just come out and said, I want to go, like, it's time for me to move on, right? Like, set it super clear. But he puts up the picture of him in a Bucks uniform, and it's like, what's going on here? Like,
clarity. CCAT, you're running the show. Do you get any clarity from Giannis Antetokounmpo here?
No, not at all.
Not at all. And that's exactly what Brian's getting at.
Yeah, and, like, that's what makes fans irritated, right? Like, that's what gets people. Because I would say, and again, the NBA and the trades and the moves and the money and all that, it's so different than the NFL.
The player,
right?
Control, like, as well.
Yes, exactly. Like, the players run this. Like, oh, Giannis has narrowed it down to Boston and Miami. Like, that's who he's narrowed it down to that he could be traded to. Like, there's only a couple guys in the NFL that get to do that if they were to even be traded, right? Like, so that already shows you the control that he has over the situation. And you can't help but think, at least me in general, when you're thinking about what's happening behind the scenes with this trade, is he and his agent not dictating these trade talks? Because they have to be, right? Like, there's no way that there's two teams and it's taking the Bucks leadership and GM and thing to figure out which one's the best deal for them, right? Like, it could be that he wants to go to Boston, right? And he's saying, I only want to go to Boston. I don't want to go to Miami. But Miami's offering the best package. He may, you know, rebuke that and not want to be a part of that. So, like, that's the part that makes this messy. And not in, like, the good Lionel Messi World Cup record way.
Ooh,
but, like, in
drop.
But, like, in, like, fans forget about all the great things that he's done, Messi type situation. And that's what I don't want to see, right? Because the dude's been so great for the city and for the franchise and what he's done. You just hate seeing things go out poorly. Let's just say that.
How, like, in your experience in the NFL, you obviously blocked for Aaron Rodgers, and I know being a part of the 2019 team, you guys went to an NFC Championship game. It was really after that when they drafted Jordan Love and things started to get contentious, but then he signed an extension because he was really good, winning MVPs, and then it hit the point. Have you been around anything close to this? I mean, like, because you weren't directly with Rodgers when this was happening, but, like, do you feel it from those players, the frustrations that are, like, kind of coming to the forefront, like, right now for Giannis? Do you feel them coming?
Potentially, yeah. Like, but here's the thing with basketball. Like, I feel like because we just said about how much player control there is, right? Like, and how much guys have a say and how they kind of dictate things. All the guys that are on the Bucks, right? Any friends that he has on that team already know what's happened. Like they've known what's been going on for the last 6-7 months, like, and what could potentially be coming down the pipe here, right? So like for their standpoint, they're probably just going, all right, so like, are we getting Jaylen Brown, or are we getting a bunch of young players and picks? Like, that's essentially the way they're probably looking at it.
And also, are they going to move me, or am I a part of the future?
Yeah, well, that too. That, like, are we completely tearing this whole thing down? And I mean, even if you bring in Jaylen Brown, right? Like, again, and I'm no basketball wizard by any stretch of the imagination, but like, even if you bring in Jaylen Brown, you get rid of Giannis, you're essentially saying, like, we are tearing it down. Like, we are tearing this thing down and restarting and trying to build this thing back and build another championship-type team through young players and picks. So regardless of if you get the trade with Boston or you don't, you're still probably looking at, and again, where you finish in the standings, I have no idea, but you're still looking at a rebuild, in my opinion, without Giannis.
Well, and they can look to offload Jaylen Brown to another team to get assets as well.
Yes.
So like that's part of this equation. And I know a lot of people get caught up in how many draft picks can we get for Giannis? This player who's not as good as Giannis went for this many first round picks, Desmond Bane, Mikal Bridges. There's a lot of examples, but I think when Giannis he has the leverage, because if the Bucks don't trade him, he can walk the next year and the Bucks get nothing. So if it's really to the point where he's not going to be a Milwaukee Buck, and that's what his camp, to our knowledge, is putting out there, that, you know, there's other teams interested, but he doesn't want to go there, that limits the amount of teams that can work with the Bucks to make a package work. And ultimately, like, the Bucks have to do their best between those two teams to try and squeeze out as much as possible. So if I'm the Bucks front office, I am trying to have them wait until as long as possible, which is scary, because then if they both pull out, you're left with nothing. And then I think the draft happens, and then you're trying to rework it, and it's you're kind of losing some equity you've built up right now in terms of trying to get this done. But there's a lot at play here. There's a lot at play here.
So I guess my question would be this, right? So obviously, if you trade Giannis this year, you're getting draft picks this year, the following year, and probably the following year would be my guess, right? Like that's got to be part of the deal, correct? Or no?
Yes, but the thing is, if you trade him after this draft, this is one of the best drafts in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Now, could you still trade them to teams that you're talking to right now? Yes. Do they make those picks? It could all happen. But you want control of that more if you're the Bucks in wanting to do this before the NBA draft.
And then my question becomes, where do Boston and the Heat pick?
Well, that's the thing, is Boston is not going to pick very high up. The Heat are 13th. The Bucks are 10th. So then who knows? Is there more that the Bucks can do after this? Do they start offloading more assets that they have that are, you know, do they move Ryan Rollins to move up in the lottery with their 10th pick? I don't know. But it'd be interesting to see if they do move on Giannis, do they start moving on other things that they have in terms of their quote-unquote assets, which aren't very deep. They just have players because they don't have a lot of picks. So if they're going to move, they got to move. And I think they got to do more than just Giannis. That's my opinion. But the first thing is they got to move Giannis. And right now, the way this has gone, anything can freaking happen, because it's been a year and a half of, I think, real conversation about him moving on elsewhere. From the offseason last year, he played against the Knicks, and then he beat the Knicks. And he said, you know, in Milwaukee, this is my city. Then it was the trade deadline. He puts out the Wolf of Wall Street, I'm not leaving, I'm not bleeping leaving, and here we are again. So that's why I think it's interesting when you ask people, do you believe that it's actually going to happen? Because there's still some that I could see why think that he's not going to be moved. So we're going to find out in the next 24 hours if he's going to be traded before the NBA draft, because that's going to be heading to us tomorrow night, believe it or not.
So essentially, they need to get it done by like tomorrow at 7 p.m.
Correct. Unless they do something in the middle of the draft when one of the teams is selecting.
Yeah.
But I think that, that at that point, you probably are already working on it that far. It does get a little dicier to make things happen while everyone else is working on drafting and you're looking at your board. And so I think the next 24 hours will be, if it happens, when it happens. If not, we did hear a report that this could go into July, and I don't think that's good for the Milwaukee Bucks.
That's bad. Yeah, that's bad in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, Kyle was trying to make an argument that it's good, but I think you lose a little bit of what is the NBA draft of 2026 being like, oh my gosh, we got to be a part of it. Because if you move them, then you can start getting on the phone to start moving other pieces to potentially move up if others are interested and assets that you have with picks that you have. So we'll see what happens. I do want to dive in with Brian Bulaga on Micah Parsons. I want to know, and I want you to think during the break here, if you've ever been involved with a situation where you've had teammates, family members, and it was different for you and I. It was around, not to this level, with social media. My brother used to tweet, and I had to tell him when I was in college, stop tweeting. Terrence Parsons is tweeting on essentially on behalf of his brother without actually being on behalf of his brother, but it's bringing news to the conversation about when Micah Parsons will be back. So I want to get into the actual Micah Parsons side of this and the brother side of this with Brian Bulaga on the Homer Hour until 6 o'clock next. It is the Homer Hour, the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. And I'm obviously not Homer. I'm Ben Brust with Brian Bulaga. We've been discussing Giannis Antetokounmpo, what you believe is going to happen, and the complications of trying to make it happen over the next 24 hours before the NBA draft. But I obviously want to get Brian a good chunk of time on the Green Bay Packers. And I have so many questions for you, Brian. The next... not this segment, but the next segment. I am going to go so deep into the offensive line because I think we all talk about it. We all understand the importance of the offensive line with Jordan Love, right? And what they're doing. That we're just get your mind ready. Start preparing to share with the audience why it's going to be okay or why it's not going to be okay or what you really got to look for in the first 4 to 6 games, because this is in parallel of our conversation with Micah Parsons. Terrence Parsons Jr., Micah's brother, has been tweeting a lot, and it's continued to pop up that he may not be ready until week 7, week 8, and you can be on the PUP list for the first 4 weeks of the season and start your 3-week practice window, which is a new rule, earlier. You don't have to do it after the first 4 weeks. But because of the meniscus being added to the ACL, it seems like it might be taking longer for recovery. And Terrence Parsons is tweeting about, well, he might need 3 weeks after week 4 to get ready for week 7, week 8. So have you ever had a situation where we've had Christian Watson's dad in Chicago? I think I've seen Rome Odunze's dad tweeting. We now have Micah Parsons' brother. Has this ever been something in a locker room where you've had to deal with a player's relative or sibling active on the talking about guys on the team?
No, it was not something that I recall ever happening. And if it did, then I wasn't aware, but I don't recall it ever taking place this way. Now, the Micah situation is interesting. And why it's interesting is because Micah hasn't said anything besides he needs 9 months of no football. That's
from,
what he has
from
said.
The date of the surgery.
Yes, that is what Micah has said. So going back to that, that's reading between the lines, right? And that's taking him literally. That's what I am doing based on now what his brother is saying. That's me taking him literally and saying he's not going to practice. He's not going to do anything until 9 months, which puts us at, and I don't know the exact day of the surgery, but that would put us somewhere around, I think, week 7, week 6, if I'm not mistaken. I think I'd have to check my my math there, but it's somewhere in that ballpark if I'm calculating correctly. And then his brother adding on top of it that he's going to need until week 8 or week 9 or whatever it is, kind of confirms that, because if you just start football activity at the 9-month mark, you're going to need a ramp up period to get your body acclimated to those movements of football and conditioning and things like that. And you just don't get to, like, as amazing of an athlete as Micah is and as dynamic as he is, all those things, you just don't all of a sudden he rolls off the pup list or rolls off the practice window and then he just goes out there and
bam,
and plays.
He's out there.
Yeah, like he needs time to work back and do that on a practice field and feel comfortable doing it against offensive linemen and cutting and chasing and doing everything that makes Micah spectacular. Like, he needs the time.
Did you have a meniscus as well when you did your ACL?
No, both of mine were clean ACLs.
Obviously being around that injury in that sport, this injury is not uncommon to also have a meniscus. Did you have to rehab before you did surgery? Because I know that's something that people do to get it ready for surgery. Because I have a great question here on the Carbless Talk and Text Line is, why did Micah wait as long as he did to have surgery? And I that's something I've never been able to figure out just yet, like from a reporting standpoint.
So with mine, listen, it could be because of a meniscus. It could have been because he had massive swelling in his knee. I know that's always a thing that people say, there's massive swelling, so you have to wait for the surgery. In my first one, I think I waited about a week and a half, 2 weeks before the surgery. My second one in 2017, on my right knee, I remember I tore it against Detroit. McKenzie checked it in the tent on the sideline. I went to the locker room after the game. I sat with him and I said, we're doing this tomorrow. And he looked at me, he goes, well, I can't do surgery tomorrow. I'm in here. I'm like, okay, then we'll do it Tuesday. And he said, okay, we'll do it. We'll do it Tuesday. That's essentially how my second one went. But I also had no other damage in the knee. It was just an ACL. And in some way, somehow, I didn't have a bunch of swelling either in that knee. Now, the first knee, I went down to Pensacola and I had James Andrews do that one. The second one, I had McKenzie do it in Green Bay. So, two different, situations, so to speak. But my only guess is that, and again, this is just speculating, I have no idea, is that he had a lot of swelling in the knee and they just didn't want to, go in there with all that swelling and potentially add more swelling and cause the recovery time to be even more. Like, that's the only, because like if you have a torn ACL, you have a torn meniscus, the rehabbing of it, like you're not really, your quad is shut down. Like it's protecting, right? Like it's in protect mode at that point in time. So your quad shuts down to protect the knee. It does a bunch of, you would think it'd be the opposite. Your quad would activate to protect the knee because it's weak, but it shuts down because of the swelling.
That's news to me.
Yeah. So that's what happens when you mess up your knee, you get swelling and your quad stops activating the way it normally does. And that's the concerning part, right? Like that's why the first thing you want to get back is your quad strength to protect the joint and things like that. So I don't know why he waited. I have no idea, right? Like,
I'm not asking you for that. Yeah. I just was wondering if in any of your experience, why it would make sense based off his specific injury, but it could be injury by injury. And again, what's done is done. And you had mentioned December 29th is when he had the surgery, and he did set that strict 9-month recovery timeline, setting the earliest possible turn to late September. And that's, again, the earliest possible return. And it feels like, it was the cautiousness around him. And now adding conversation from his brother, week 7, week 8 is when it seems like he would return. And I guess my question to you would be, when he returns, it's probably not going to be, as you said, even when he returns after practicing after 3 weeks being activated, will he be a third down guy? Like, do we see him similarly to how he was against the Lions in week one last year? Like, that's another portion of this. How ready will he be to be Micah?
Yeah, my guess is that he starts on a pitch count again, right? He starts third down, obvious passing situations. Maybe he gets sprinkled in there on first down from time to time just to get some reps in, and then they slowly add reps and percentage of the game as he gets healthier, right? Or not healthier, but as he gets that workload on that knee. And that would be my guess. So, like, if end of September is technically the 9-month mark, right? That's when I would start his, when he said no football. So that's end of September. What is that? Week four?
Right around.
Week four. And then, yeah, add another 3 to 4 weeks to that, because that's when he's going to start football activity. And that, to me, makes total sense.
October 4th would be week four against the Buccaneers. Then you're looking at the 11th is the Bears, the 18th is the Cowboys, and the 25th is the Lions. So, again, I think based off the way this timeline's been laid out, maybe Terrence Parsons Jr. is on to something.
Yeah, he very well could have some insider knowledge on it.
I don't know if he talks to his brother or not, but I do find it fascinating that he is actively putting this out, though, because it is very useful information for other teams in terms of preparing for the Green Bay Packers if they wanted to use a little of that to their advantage. But again, people don't get fooled anymore by when guys are coming back.
No,
the injury report, you got to be pretty straightforward honest with it, yeah, unless you want to deal with a fine.
Yeah, I mean, like, while it's hard to get away with anything now with the injury report, like, it is interesting that his brother's going about it that way. Like, listen, I don't know their relationship, or I don't know anything like that. It's really none of my business, to be dead honest with you. Like, I don't really, it is what it is. I mean, I know if that were my brother, we'd have a conversation.
You're like me.
Yeah, we would have had a conversation.
Hey,
but
pipe down over there. Yeah. Can you keep our texts and our conversations between us? I don't need you going to be viral on social media.
Yeah, I mean, and I look at it from his brother's standpoint, like almost trying to soften the blow for Packers fans, like expecting him to be back at week five. And he's like, you guys are for some reason expecting him to be back after week five, and it may be closer to week eight. Like, I can
see from a Packers perspective, he's a long-term investment. It's not just a 2026 investment.
No, he is a long, long-term investment. So, like, it makes sense to me that you would push it out to week seven, week eight. Like, it just makes sense to me. Like, right, 9 months is at the end of September. Okay, now you give him another 3-4 weeks. That's 10 months. It makes sense with that type of player. And again, it's not an offensive lineman we're talking about. Like, my first one, because I tore it in training camp, I had the full year to get it ready, right? Like, that was, I mean, I'm not saying it was a luxury, but
I was going to say, it sucked, but
yeah,
on the bright side, you were able to get extra time to get you more comfortable for when you're back.
Yeah, the second one was a way quicker turnaround. Like, it was like an 8 or 9 monther, if I don't recall, because I think I tore it against the Lions. That was more middle of the season. So, like, but then again, that was my second ACL. I was way more comfortable in the rehab and the pain tolerance and everything that I was expected. So I was able to push that one. And it felt pretty good. So it's just different circumstances. But with what he is, right, like, yes, he's a pass rusher, but he's so dynamic laterally, side to side, how he cuts, how he turns, how he bends. Like, you want him to have zero thought about that knee. You want him to just be like he was before that ACL, cutting, pushing, planning, twisting, everything that he does that makes him who he is. You don't want to even think about it. So, like, to me, if you can give him 7-8 more, you know, week to week 7-8, perfect, perfect. And let him come back in, because he is a long-term investment. He wasn't just a 2026 investment. So
Yeah, well, here's the thing. If that's the case, the attention in my mind, you look at the defense and how they play without him, but the most consistent thing the Packers do have over the last 4 years is head coach quarterback, and that head coach is an offensive mind. And how does that offense help carry that? And we talked a little bit about this on Kyle and Bruss, but I want to dive deeper into the offensive side of things, because shortening the game or lengthening the games, longer possessions, how do they achieve that? Well, they got to put it together in the offensive line. Like, the offensive line, we've all talked about it. It's super important. And all the people that sit on the couch go, oh, our offensive line stinks. Or, you know, like, there's armchair offensive line coaches. Ah, they're not good enough. Well, we got an expert. In order for Jordan Love to be successful, he can't be running around like he was in the second half of the season last year. So we're going to figure out how he gets there and what the offense has to do with an offensive line expert, Brian Bulaga, next on the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour with Ben Brust. It is the Homer Hour without Homer. I'm Ben Brust with Brian Bulaga. It's the Brian Bulaga, Ben Brust Homer Hour. And let's put out our discount liquor Twitter poll. When Homer is back on tomorrow during the Homer Hour, will Giannis still be a Milwaukee Buck? I think we can keep it that simple. What do you think, Brian?
I'm going to say no.
You are going to say no?
Yeah.
I think it's, I mean, if they don't have it done by the time Homer's on, then it gets really tight. Deadline spur action. And that NBA draft, like, you don't want to be doing it right up to the draft, because you're going to want time to figure out what you're going to do with said assets that you're trying to acquire, which would incline me to say the same as you. I do not believe it, but there is also that part of me where this chaos of Giannis just will not go away, that who knows? You got to leave. I know we're supposed to be definitive here, but in this situation, after seeing Giannis put out an Instagram post and a Twitter post of him standing there in a Bucks jersey looking into darkness, I don't know. I just don't. It's hard to say. If anyone, without hearing from Giannis himself, what anyone's thinking.
If you're Giannis, where do you want to go, Boston or Miami?
I'd want to go to Boston. I'd easily want to go to Boston.
Yeah.
They have a more championship-ready team, and I believe his goal is to win a second championship. If you're the Bucks, I don't love the Heat's offer, but it gives you more. It gives you more. Jaylen Brown, I guess you have an option to build around him if you'd want to, or to flip him. So, but again, for Giannis, if I'm Giannis, I mean, they won a championship not that long ago, and they still have guys part of that championship roster. Now, they did have to move some guys, but Giannis, if he's as good as we believe that he is and is able to stay healthy, he's a different type player than Jaylen Brown, and again, I think that gives him the best chance to win a second championship.
Yeah. I know that Boston has already a good team, right?
Correct.
Like, they're already a good team.
They overachieved in the year that Jason Tatum was coming back off the Achilles. Now, I did mention, and we did talk about here with Brian Bulaga on the Homer Hour, that Micah Parsons, we try to, you know, dive into that timeline with Brian's experience playing the NFL, dealing with knee injuries. What my brain goes to is what the Packers need to do, obviously defensively, but offensively with Micah Parsons out, how this offense can help kind of neutralize the fact that he's gone with those long sustained drives you and I talked about on Kyle and Bruss not that long ago. I'm nervous, though. Like, they don't have a lot of depth outside of the five guys that they have at the offensive line. The five guys that they have never played with each other in those five positions. Jordan Morgan's finally going to play the position at left tackle. He was drafted to play. Aaron Banks was underwhelming with injury and play last year. Sean Ryan played 8 games at center. He's going to be your center. Anthony Belton will be in his second year. And speaking of knee injuries, teletendon injury for Zach Tom, which is kind of a major injury. What's he going to be like coming off of that? So he has time to recover as well. Probably we're talking about Micah. I would love to know just as much about Zach Tom as much as we're learning about Micah. So with everything we laid out with Micah Parsons and him being out for an extended period of time, unknown, how can Jordan Love, Josh Jacobs, all those skilled position players flourish with this offensive line?
Well, The hope, at least that I have, at least this is my being very, you know, positive about it.
That's fine. Be positive about it.
Yeah, because I am an offensive line homer until I watch what they do, and then I'm back to reality and I tell the truth on what I'm seeing, right? But like, this is off-season outlook. Like I said, is that these guys improved from last season. Now, like I said, on KB or KB, Kyle and Brust, not KBN, sorry.
You're all good. Keep it rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. Banks is obviously the oldest guy, right? So, like, he's the oldest guy in the group. He had his ups and downs last year with injuries and things like that, but you're hoping that there's more of a consistent, steady performance from him, right? Like a leveling out of, this is who he is, this is what you're going to get week to week. The injuries kind of subside a little bit so that he can just stay a consistent performer. To me, that's improvement from last year, right? Like that to me would be major improvement from last year with him. You look at the center position. He only played 8 games. So I'm automatically, with the new contract, with some confidence, with some belief from the organization that he gets from that, he's going to play better. He got 8 games of experience, playoff game too. And to me, he takes that into the offseason. He improves dramatically, and he ends up being a really good performer for this group all season at the center position. Sean Ryan, that is. I think Zach Tom is an interesting topic because I know how good Zach Tom is and how he can be. He's gone through injuries since signing that new deal. Obviously had the patella injury, had surgery to fix whatever it was. I know Jason said that it wasn't a full, it wasn't like a patella tendon fix. It was like they shaved some off that was damaged and now it's hell. Like, I don't know the ins and outs of it. Cause I don't know many guys that have dealt with patella injuries. But my guess is that he recovers well and he gets back to playing like himself. And if that's the case, then you have a Pro Bowl type performer out at that position if he stays healthy, which is also a major improvement if we're looking at it that way. Now we move on to right guard with Belton. And I think this is where we're going to see some competition this summer.
Okay.
Right? Because I think the rookie who LaFleur has been speaking about with rave reviews from OTAs is going to push Belton this summer to get reps and to get potentially a shot at starting if Belton doesn't up his game and perform at a certain level during training camp. And to me, that's where this becomes a little interesting because, yes, there's always a risk at starting a rookie, obviously. But if he's performing at a high level and he outcompetes Belton, because we saw what Belton can give, and if Belton hasn't improved, that means we would have gotten the status quo from last year and that this kid has outperformed him.
Competition is good, though.
Yes, which is fantastic to me. So that means you're getting an improvement based on what we saw last year from Belton. And I hope Belton got into the offseason this year and just worked, because I think there's a lot of potential there. I really do. But again, there's going to be competition there. And that's where I see it happening, is at the right guard position, which I think is a good thing. And then we just go to left tackle. Let's just call it what it is. This is the position that
I have 5 question marks underneath it.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to wait and see, because he's been asking to play the position he's been drafted to play. All right, we'll see what you got, because at right guard and right tackle didn't look so good.
Yes, correct. And this is what's going to decide a lot of things with this group. And I hate to put it on one position, but listen, with the offensive line, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And that's how I truly feel about the group as a whole. Like, how much we all work together and one guy affects the next guy. And it's like a chain, it's like a domino effect, right? If one guy messes up, the rest do. And it makes another guy potentially look bad, right? If one guy gets beaten pass protection and Jordan Love has to step up, he may run into another guy's defensive lineman and it's a sack. And it has nothing to do with the guy that gave up the sack, but it's a domino effect. Things happen. So to me, this is the biggest question mark, is how much do we get out of Jordan Morgan and how well does he play? And I think there's optimism that he plays well, but at the same time, I can't be sure because I got to see it, right? Like, I have to see it. And I think we'll have a good idea about who he is as a player within the first 4 weeks of the season and how he's playing. Not going to judge him week one, not going to judge him week two. I will start to judge a little bit more week three and four, because you've had enough time now to get settled in. And that's the way I'm kind of viewing that.
I think that's a perfect way to view it from an optimistic standpoint, and I think that's a great way to look at it. If you think this team can do something while Micah Parsons is gone, they're going to need that offensive line to play well, to give Jordan Love time, because I think a lot of people believe in the group that they've invested in, Tucker Kraft, Matthew Golden, Christian Watson, and Jaden Reed, not to mention Josh Jacobs, if they go back to some of the stuff that you've talked about. Basic concepts from the early days of Matt LaFleur, the outside zone. There's a lot of things that can happen that we're going to be watching and learning together throughout the offseason and when we get into real football. But we'll wrap up the Homer Hour with Ben Bruss and Brian Bulaga coming up next. Do not go anywhere. The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour with Ben Bruss. Brian, you're a soccer guy. I'm sure you're taking in the World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
I was at a watch party in Madison. It was awesome watching them win 2-0. Obviously, 4-1 in the first game. They've already clinched the one seed out of the group. Two-part question. How far can they actually go to us non-soccer followers, but that just love watching United States competition? And two, what would you do in the game? Would you roll out the same guys for consistency, or would you let some other guys play knowing you're already advancing?
Yeah, I mean, I'll answer the second question first. I mean, this next one, I would sit guys, I'd rotate the team. Definitely don't play any guys that are on yellows so that you don't potentially...
Good call. Yep. Two yellows equals a game out.
Yep, so definitely don't play any of those guys. If Pulisic's okay, I would bring him out in the second half for about 20 minutes just to give him some minutes. And
I
just
like
so,
that.
Just so he gets a feel for the game. Just that's what I would do. But I would rotate the team and give guys opportunities, because you never know what's going to happen in these knockout games. Like, things happen, and you want to have guys prepared, essentially. You want to have guys primed and ready to go. And these guys are fighting for something that would be coming in and playing this last game, right? To go 3-0 in the group for the first time ever. I mean, they're playing for something. So they should be playing extremely hard. So will it be the same as what we watched the last 2 weeks? Or, yeah, essentially 2 weeks. No, yeah. It won't be, because the quality of the players aren't the same as the guys that are starting. But I still think you're going to get a very competitive, hard-fought match with the rotation. The second part is I truly believe, if you're looking the way this thing's setting up, and as I've looked into it,
oh, get me excited, Brian.
I think that they should be able to get to the quarters and win the quarters. That's how I feel about this team right now, the way it's setting up.
So USA! Like, USA! Yeah. I'm trusting you. And again, I mean, they have been great. Like, they're playing well. They play well together. They're playing with swag. Like, I love the way that they have been playing and representing this country. Now, I love your optimism. I'm going to trust you more than my analysis. We're going to see it all together.
Yep. I can't wait. It's very exciting stuff.
Brian, it's been fun for the Brian Bulaga, Ben Bruss Homer Hour. You'll have Homer on Thursday. Don't worry.
This was great. This was great.
A little change up, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Well, I'll be listening tomorrow, on Thursday, on my ride home from Summerfest. So we'll be talking to you on Kyle and Bruss in the Homer Hour then.